Today, looking at the founders of our founders on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is my Vice Chairman, co-host, and really good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And I'm going to be bad cop again today and invite you all to visit www.principledpolicy.com. And leave us a question or a comment or a donation or all the above. We are ready for suggestions as well. Please go out there to www.principledpolicy.com and let us know what you think.
Absolutely. And also, you know, that's a place where, like I said, at the beginning of every month, we go back into our web archives and look at what your comments have been. And we have an open mailbag here on the program. Where we talk about and try to answer the question, the issues that we've been discussing. So what we've been discussing this week, however, is Thanksgiving. And we're right now, it's Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, and we haven't even gotten close to where the pilgrims supposedly were gathering for a great feast in order to give thanks to their Indian or Native American saviors. As Chuck had said earlier this week, in some of the public school textbooks, that's how they determined why they were having this feast, was just to give thanks to the Indians, which had saved them from all the depredations and hardships. Now, we know that at least half of the original settlers died that first winter. And yes, if it hadn't been for the Native Americans showing them some things about how to plant, what types of planting to do, the soil conditions, how to fish in the bays for the fish, that yes, that many of them probably would not have survived. But we also are looking at the fact that they understood full well why they were there in the first place. And it wasn't just for commercial enterprise. It was for the advancement of the kingdom of Christ. And that's something you won't find in the public school textbooks. We're too PC in this culture and too pluralistic, and we have to edit that out. But what I wanted to look at today, and Chuck, you and I had chatted about this a little bit, was the fact that if our founders, you know, when we talk about the founding fathers, well, the founding fathers, honestly, of this country are not George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and the rest of the gang who were alive and well and kicking in the 1770s and 1780s. Honestly, our founding fathers had names like William Brewster and William Bradford, and others of that like, who were all members of the company that set sail on the Mayflower and landed in 1620 at Plymouth, because it was from their coming together as a body politic that we started to get the bases, along with what they brought with them from England, going all the way back to Magna Carta and the common law in England, of our structure of liberty that we have under our Constitution today. So what I want to do, Chuck, is I want to go back to William Bradford and his book, The History of the Plymouth Settlement, or what we also know as of Plymouth Plantation. Bradford, who was one of the governors of the new colony, wrote extensively, and you can get this book, ladies and gentlemen. It's readily available. You can look it up by its title of Plymouth Plantation, or you can look it up as Bradford's History of the Plymouth Settlement. But a number of different organizations republished this. It's in the public domain. One that I'm using right now comes from Mantle Ministries in Texas. But it's a fantastic read because you get to see what the original sources, what these people were actually thinking and what they wrote during the time they were doing this. So now we've got the pilgrims. They've been aboard the Mayflower. They've gone through across the Atlantic. Now, Chuck, just a little thought, this little historical note. Do you know what the Mayflower, the ship, the Mayflower's original use and purpose was for?
I believe that was a slaver.
No, it was not. It was a cargo ship, but it was But it was used to transport casks of wine, mainly, and other cargo. And it was interesting because, and I heard this when we were going and doing some tours in history, that what happened was that the hold of the Mayflower, you know, when you had all these casks of wine in there and you have rolling seas and things, sometimes you would have the bungs that would pop out of the wine barrels, and the wine would splosh, and it'd get all over, and it'd soak into all the wood in the decks and everything else. And that is so. And it had been a merchant ship for a number of years, so that when the pilgrims got on board, obviously there were really more pilgrims than this little ship could handle, because they started out with two ships. That when they all got into the hold, you would expect on a 90-day journey in the 1620s, and you had over 100 people who were crammed into a small hold of a merchant vessel, what would you end up having?
Disease.
Absolutely. You would have disease. You would have, you know, things like dysentery and other things that would take place because of the unsanitary conditions. Do you know that I think only one person in the entire company got sick at sea, and it was because the alcohol in the wine that had soaked into the wood of the hold actually acted as antibiotics and killed off all the bacteria that would otherwise have created a massive amount of disease for those pilgrims. Another way where God's providence worked out, because if they'd all gone aboard the Speedwell, which, Chuck, that's the Speedwell was the slaver.
That's right.
If they had gone aboard the Speedwell, many of them would have died before they even got to the shores of Plymouth. However, because they had to go aboard the Mayflower by God's providence, they were all protected in their life and their health to get to America.
Well, you can rest assured there was sickness aplenty, but it was seasickness, not sickness due to disease.
Yeah, I believe only one person got sick, and I think maybe died on the voyage over, but that was because of an illness that they already had before they had set out on the journey.
Now, well, don't take this as gospel, but yeah. I think that person had tuberculosis.
Okay, well, very much could very well have been that. I'm not sure. But ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening and you know the answer, hey, go to our website at principlepolicy.com and shoot us a quick note and let us know what that might be. So, but I wanted to look, because once they got there, they didn't immediately hit the longboats and head to shore. And Bradford tells why they didn't. Because what they did was they drew up what's called the Mayflower Compact. Many of you may have heard of it. Some of you may have even read it at one time or the other, but I'm going to tell you why they did it. Because Bradford, in his book of Plymouth Plantation, says this. He says that first I will turn back a little and begin with a compact or deed drawn up by them before they went ashore to settle, constituting the first foundation of their government. This was occasioned partly by the discontented and mutinous speeches that some of the strangers amongst them had let fall, that when they got ashore, they would use their liberty that none had power to command them, the patent procured being for Virginia and not for New England, which belonged to another company with which the Virginia Company had nothing to do. And further, it was believed by the leading men among the settlers that such a deed, drawn up by themselves, considering their present condition, would be as effective as any patent, and in some respects, more so. So you have two things going on here. First of all, when they had finally secured a charter, it was a charter for Virginia, not for New England. And so they had they had some among them who were taking the trip who were not part of their separatist religious movement, but were just mainly adventurers or men who wanted to sail the seas and go and try to get commercial advantage in a new and untested land with lots of natural resources. And as they were getting close, these men were all grumbling and getting mutinous and saying, hey, well, we don't have to be bound by anything because this isn't Virginia. So you already had that self-centered lack of self-government among men who were greedy and who wanted the advantage, and the rest of the settlers were like, no, we can't have that. You can't have that kind of thing. It can't be every man for himself in a wild and untested country, because that's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And also because that they believed that they really needed to have something that would actually bind the company together as effectively as a patent or a charter from the king of England in order to be able to have rules and have a government. In other words, our pilgrim settlers did not believe in anarchy. Now, did they, Chuck?
Well, certainly not. They were definitely not anarcho-libertarians. They believed in the rule of law. They were Republican by nature, and I'm not members of the Republican Party. They were small R Republicans. They believed in the rule of law. And then one of the things that they were doing with the Mayflower Compact was basically establishing a rule of law until they could get a rechartering from the king, because they had gotten a charter and it basically said you'll land in Virginia, and strictly speaking, everything that England claimed was at the time was Virginia.
Yeah.
But they were in what was called Northern Virginia. They landed hundreds of miles off course. Which happened. I mean, you figure you get blasted around in the late fall in a North Atlantic sea and you're dependent upon the winds and the currents to carry you. Very often you're going to end up kind of far away from where you set out.
By God's providence, instead of landing in Norfolk, they ended up landing in Plymouth, but they could have landed in Nova Scotia.
Oh, very easily. And in fact, they landed in one of the few safe harbors north of, well, Manhattan and possibly Providence, Rhode Island. I mean, they ended up a long way north, and we don't know what would have happened had they landed in one of those places. But we do know what happened providentially. What happened when they landed at Plymouth?
Absolutely. Now, the form of the compact that they drew up in order to be their first foundation of government, and honestly, Chuck, it is our first foundation of government in America, was called the Mayflower Compact in 1620. And this is, as Bradford relates, he says, the form of the deed was as follows. And I want to read it to folks. It says, in the name of God, amen, we whose names are underwritten, the loyal subjects of our dread sovereign lord, King James, by the grace of God, of Great Britain, France, and Ireland, King, Defender of the Faith, etc., having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith and honor of our king and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do by these presents solemnly and mutually in the presence of God and of one another, covenant and combine ourselves into a civil body politic for our better ordering and preservation and the furtherance of the ends aforesaid, and by virtue hereof to enact, constitute, and frame such just and equal laws, ordinances, acts, constitutions, and offices from time to time, as shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general use of the colony, unto which we promise all due submission and obedience, in witness whereof we have here underscribed our names at Cape Cod, 11th of November, in the year of the reign of our sovereign lord, King James of England, France, and Ireland, the 18th, and of Scotland, the 54th, A.D. 1620. So there you have it. There was our first form foundation of government, ladies and gentlemen, the Mayflower Compact. Why? Because they'd come for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith, and they developed by a covenant a civil body politic in order to advance those purposes. So our first government was created in this country to advance the Christian faith and to give glory to God.
And that's one of those things that is so foreign. And again, as I stated yesterday and the day before, that's one of the reasons that the publishers of textbooks and schools who use them are doing their best to put that faith in a box, get the lid on it, and nail the lid on with these fairy stories about the Puritans holding a 3-day feast to give thanks to the Indians and not to God.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to discuss later this week some of the ways the Pilgrim settlers interacted with the Indians and some of the agreements that they drew up with them, and then why we got to the first Thanksgiving. So we're looking here. I think we're just about out of time. And if so, then we need to go ahead and wrap up, and we will see you tomorrow afternoon at 5:30 with more Principles and Policies.
Be with us tomorrow at 5:30 and visit us at www.principledpolicy.com.